Hey, welcome back to my quarantine room. The NBA has had me locked in here for 7 straight days. No going outside, no sunlight, and I had to wear this bracelet so that if I did try to sneak outside, someone would know I'm not supposed to be there. But today, I just got my 7th straight negative coronavirus test back. That means I'm free, means the bracelet can come off. Yes, and I can go check out the outside world. Oh my God, this is incredible. It's like 90 degrees in July in Orlando, and I don't care at all. Fresh air is so cool. Now this is a little buzzer that I have to, it has a clip, I have to attach it to myself because not only do you have to wear a mask, but you also have to stay 6 or 8 feet away from everyone else on the NBA campus. And you will alarm if you get within 6 or 8 feet of another person wearing one of these buzzers. I'm so excited to be outside. I'm happy to social distance from anyone. I'm gonna go check out what else has been going on in the bubble and I'll be back to host the show. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. Yes, fresh out of quarantine here on the NBA campus at Walt Disney World. Woo. I am joined today by NBA champion Kendrick Perkins from his home in Texas. And yes, NBA senior writer Zach Lowe, now an actual homeowner. We're so proud. He's got bookshelves and everything. It's amazing. Coming up, guys, the league told teams over the weekend that none of the games here in Orlando will impact the various regular season awards. Does that mean Giannis is running away with the MVP vote? Stick around. You can find out. First, though, we are just 2 days away from real-life NBA basketball action when the exhibitions start on Wednesday. I spent my morning watching Lakers practice. It was so nice to just be in a gym around actual NBA basketball things going on for the first time in 4 months. Kendrick, how valuable will the 3 exhibition games be for the teams here in Orlando?
Well, Kendrick. Right to listen. First of all, I didn't even want to comment because you and I are not cool right now. I'm a little jealous. I didn't even want to come on the show because you're down there in the bubble. I seen your clip. I seen your clip today, and you was in the Lakers practice watching some good NBA basketball scrimmaging up and down. And I'm jealous. Tell you straight up, I'm jealous. So at the end of the day, I cannot wait till Wednesday. I don't care if it is an expedition game or a scrimmage, but this is what the guys need. They need this type of playing against other opponents. You could practice all in a squad if you want, but it don't compare to playing against other people, other players and other teams. One, you got to make sure you get your rhythm right. Another thing, you got to make sure your offensive sets are going right. The last thing, your defensive rotation's got to be on point. But the coaches got to make sure that they do a great job of also playing their guys to get them in shape and in rhythm, but also managing their minutes to make sure that they don't have any injuries or trying to, you know, force too much on them at one time.
Look, I'm on the verge of driving around my neighborhood just looking for pickup games to spy on and watch, like maybe safe socially. I'll watch anything. I'll watch the Washington Generals play someone who's not the Globetrotters. But all of these games, like, we long ago surpassed a normal offseason, right? I mean, this is like 4 or 4.5 months. I've lost total track of time. All of these practices, all these exhibition games, except for maybe some teams who are short so many players that it's sort of not useful for the time being, but all of this stuff is important. These teams need to get their rhythm back, their chemistry back, at the very least pick up where they left off. Every second of basketball matters right now.
Yeah, and look, guys, the league set up these exhibition games to be held between teams not likely to face each other in the playoffs. And that's kind of spurred some interesting stuff. Heat coach Eric Spoelstra said he's been in contact with the coaches he's facing this week so they can actually work together to get the most out of scrimmages. Here's his quote. He said, "I've already talked to Quinn Snyder and Luke Walton about trying to work on some things. Again, because you have to fast track so much before you get to that 8-game regular season. So we'll approach it that way. We'll probably play everyone available. We'll definitely work on some things. and do a little bit of evaluating as well. So that is something we do not see normally during the preseason, is coaches actually planning running sets for each other. Zach, these are largely teams that won't meet down in Orlando unless both teams get to the NBA Finals. Still, are you surprised to hear that coaches are working together like this?
No, I think it's cool. I mean, look, we keep hearing over and over again accurately that this is an unprecedented situation, and this is a situation where everyone is going to have to lift each other up, even competitors, even people who are trying to beat each other, normally bloodthirsty rivals. Whatever anyone can do to make these games useful so that by the time the real games start, we're as close to normal as possible, I think it's great.
Man, Zach, listen, I think you're 100% right. But look, Rachel, one thing about Coach Spoelstra, he's smart. You heard who he was communicating with, right? The coaches in the Western Conference. He's not going to show it. He's not going to show his hand to the Eastern Conference staff. But I think it's a beautiful thing to see. You know, that means that everyone is working collectively to try to make this thing happen, making sure that their players are put in position to be successful, trying to limit injuries, and just trying to figure out a way to make this thing work. And I love what they're doing as a whole. Everyone is coming together, like Zach said, and it's just a beautiful thing to watch. But it's Eastern Conference, Western Conference. They're not showing their hand to their conference opponents, so we got to keep that in mind.
Well, so, some of these games will be televised. I don't want to blow any secrets there. So they do got to be a little bit careful of what they're being scouted by. Also, interestingly, they haven't decided yet. Are they wearing practice clothes? Are they wearing game jerseys? They will not be debuting the jerseys with the social justice messaging on the back. Those will wait until the opening of the regular season seeding games. But, Zach, do you think the back and forth between the teams, once you settle in and start watching these scrimmages, will fans feel like they're watching NBA basketball, or it will just look more like a glorified practice? What do you expect?
I think these exhibition games, I think we need to lower our expectations. I think it's going to look like somewhere in between a glorified practice and regular NBA basketball, which is fine. That's what we should expect. Like Perk says, I don't necessarily think we're going to see the gimmick defense any coach has, you know, squirreled away for the second rounder, the best out of bounds play. There's going to be some rust. There's going to be a lot of missed shots. There's going to be offense typically at the beginning of every season starts more slowly. But you know what? Get all of that over with now. That's great. Let's get as close to normal as we can for July 30th, and more importantly, the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. Zach, you're preaching the gospel today, but listen, any rhythm that you could get, and even from the 15 man on the roster, that's the thing that the coaches have to keep in mind. Also, you have to try to find a way to get everybody minutes during these expedition games, because you never know what could happen in this bubble. And I think not only do you need to get your rotational player minutes, you got to make sure that you prime and prep those guys that are at the end of the bench so that they could be ready to come in and contribute just in case someone get hurt, or God forbid, just in case someone catch the coronavirus. So it's a tall task, in my opinion, for the coaching staff. And they're finally going to have to do their job, which they're getting paid millions of dollars to do, and coach.
Some of them coach every day, Kendrick. I'm just going to stick up for the coaches here. That's a good point about playing all the guys, though. And I also want to remind people, in just the first exhibition game, not the rest of them, but the first one that each team plays, they're going to play 10-minute quarters instead of 12-minute quarters, again, to just help guys ease into it. It's been a long time since we all watched or played basketball. They're gonna just ease their way, gentlemen. Coming up, we will update you on Jimmy Butler's request to wear a blank nameplate on the back of his jersey, and there were reportedly many other players who wished to do the same. The league has yet to approve it. We'll catch you up on the latest. First, though, as we count down to the days until we get basketball again, we are running back the top plays of the season so far. So here's numbers 12 through 10.
12 turnovers now on the Lakers. Picks roll with Gordon and Vucevic. Aaron throws a pass to himself. He stuffs it in. My goodness, you gotta be kidding. Aaron Gordon.
Doesn't get much better than this. The up and under, no room. Throw it up there and go get it yourself.
And now the Hornets need one more shot to go through. Cody Marsh will trigger the inbound. Monk fires. First game winner in the three-year career, Malik Monk.
We shoot 38% from downtown. Here comes LBJ! Look out!
Oh, the crowd on their feet. That's what they came to see. If nothing else happens, they're happy now.
Oh, yeah. LeBron James.
The Jump is brought to you by Dell Technologies. Talk to an advisor today.
What's amazing, Narum, is when you think about right now, some of the stuff that John Lewis was fighting for, we're still fighting for. Voter suppression right now is at an all-time high. It's amazing how hard we have a group of people who are trying to get people not to vote. Latinos, Blacks, and young people are the targets. That's who they're trying to get not to vote. And it's amazing when you think about how long ago that was, and yet we're still fighting that fight.
That was Clippers coach Doc Rivers reflecting on civil rights icon, longtime U.S. Congressman, the great John Lewis, who of course died Friday. And Lewis, his impact, particularly on voting rights, guys, this was on the minds of all players and coaches when we talked to them this weekend. Nuggets coach Mike Malone revealed the team is going to be filming PSAs to promote voting participation. You saw in one of our clips earlier in the show, Greg Popovich wearing a t-shirt that said, "Vote as if your life depended on it," because of course it does for many people. And we continue to see leaders in the NBA speak out and encourage speaking out about racial and social injustice. Yesterday, Mavs owner Mark Cuban reiterated his support for any demonstration that his players might want to make during the national anthem. This was, you know, sort of something he's been talking about for a couple weeks, but today a talk show host tweeted he would no longer be a Mavs fan if a player knelt during the anthem. Cuban responded first with a tweet saying, "Bye," and then he said, "The national anthem police in this country are out of control." Kendrick, do you expect to see players taking a knee if there are anthems played before games? They've said that they do intend to play them in the arenas. And what do you think of sort of this conversation about it?
Well, I do, Rachel. I mean, listen, I expect people to take a knee. Some people may sit down. But at the end of the day, it's what they believe in. And I applaud Mark Cuban for standing behind his players. This is what the players are asking for their ownership to support them however they want to go about it, for us bringing awareness to what's going on in the country. And by the way, Ted Cruz, you're wrong. By the way, I'm team Mark Cuban. He's always been on the front line of standing behind players for us with the ownership. And what he's saying is right. Like, hey, I'm going to support my guys. I'm going to support my team. I'm going to support other players. And that's what we need. That's what we've been asking for as players. We've been begging the ownership for their support. We've been begging the ownership for them to support us. And by the way, the NBA is made up of 80% African Americans. So with the ownership group supporting us, that speaks volumes to me, because we have so many people in our African American communities that look up to us. And so with people of power of other race to support us in whatever we do and trying to make a stance and bring awareness is a beautiful thing. And I'm team Mark Cuban.
First of all, really? One or two people kneel during the national anthem when the lights are dark anyway and you're looking at the flag, and it ruins your whole sports fandom experience? You can't just get by that, even if you disagree with it somehow, and watch a basketball game and enjoy it? Like, really? Number two, whether players kneel or not is interesting. What's sort of left me with a bad taste in my mouth is the NBA continues to cop out on this. Every time they address it publicly, they say, well, we'll deal with that when it comes. And it seems like they just hope it doesn't come. They don't want to erase the rule that's on the rule books, but they don't want to say that. So, like, either you enforce the rule or you don't enforce the rule. Say what the actual stance is. And to me, like, if you want to embrace this moment like you say you are, let the players kneel. Don't enforce the rule, or either collectively bargain to wipe it away.
Yeah, I mean, there are rules on the books that they have already ignored. in the cause of letting players express themselves, uniform rules before games, shoe rules, things like that. But absolutely, them deciding to keep this rule in the books has been interesting to me as well. And Zach, you and I were on this show a few weeks ago discussing this with Richard Jefferson, and his big concern was don't let the national anthem become a red herring. Obviously, what we need to be talking about is not the national anthem. It is about the major, major issues, the things we have to fix in this country. I really respect that idea as well. I will say, though, what I keep saying about the names on the jerseys or Mark Cuban coming out and saying something like this, giving NBA players the space, the room to have these kinds of expressions, to make these kinds of statements if they want to, that's what's important to me. It's not whether they do it or not. That is their personal choice. It's that the NBA is standing up, that owners like Mark Cuban are standing up and say, you have the room to speak your truth and we will support you. That's the decision that's important to me. And him reiterating that today, I thought was really, really powerful. I want to get to the jersey thing also, though, guys, because last week we told you Jimmy Butler wanted to go with a blank nameplate on the back of his jersey during the first few games of this restart. The idea being that, yeah, he's an NBA player, but when he walks out his front door, he could be any black man fighting all of the battles that black Americans face against systemic racism. Now, Yahoo Sports is reporting about 30 other players want to follow Jimmy's lead, but the league has yet to approve that. So, Perk, how do you think the league should handle this?
Well, you know, listen, I'm not the one to judge anyone on how they want to go about it addressing it. You know, like I said before, Rachel, we all are fighting the same fight. But my thing is, do something. You know, whether or not you don't want to have the message on the back of your jersey, but wear your family name with pride. That means a lot also. I mean, but not just to have it blank. I say nah, because you know how many, you know how hard it was for guys before us, the older generation, to fight for us as African-American players to be able to play in the NBA. That's a privilege in itself. So you should wear your name on the back of your jersey with pride if you choose not to, you know, put a saying or a slogan or whatever the case may be on the back of it. So I'm not judging, but I'm kind of against it. I'm just like, do something, wear something, whether it's your name, slogan, or whatever. Do something. Don't take it for granted.
But Kendrick, this is him doing something, right, Zach? I mean, for Jimmy, this is him doing something. This is making a statement. His point is, yeah, I'm famous, but that doesn't buy you privilege in this country. If your skin is a certain color, you don't have access to things that people say, oh, pull you up by your bootstraps. The idea is that when you walk out the door as a black man, you are treated differently in this country, and that has to change.
Well, right, I think it's the kind of thing that would look. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, I think it's the kind of thing that would look striking on television. I have no name back there, and I keep hearing from all sides, all stakeholders, how this is an unprecedented event. Everyone, an unprecedented circumstance. Everyone is going to have to make compromises. Players are going to have to take pay cuts. Owners are going to have to do this, that, and that. So why can't we compromise on this? It's just a name on a jersey. Like, all TVs are in high definition. We're all going to know that it's Jimmy Butler. If 30 other players take their names off their jerseys because they agree with what Jimmy Butler is doing, we're all going to be able to tell who the players are. I don't understand why this would be out of bounds, but there are so many other things that are going to have to change.
And then, by the way, Rachel, aren't they auctioning the jerseys off afterwards? Like,
yes.
To me, I think that means something. Like, you know, let's auction it off with something on the back of it. Nobody want to, you know, like, if we go auction it off, you don't want to auction off a Jimmy Butler jersey with a blank name on the back. You want to at least have his name or some type of statement on the back. That's what's going to sell to go to the cause. So that's all I'm saying.
Well, look, we'll see if he gets to do it. If he does, Kendrick, you and I will keep track of what it auctions for. We'll revisit for sure. All right, guys, coming up, you're going to hear LeBron's response to a question I asked him about the league not letting games here in Orlando impact the regular season awards. That was an interesting conversation this morning. First, though, it's time for our first distant replay from this summer league. Let's see, Summer League 2005 featuring J.R. Smith. It's amazing. It normally be summer league time now, guys.
What are there that, hey, I'm gonna make my name off of him.
J.R. Smith, the steal and the finish. And he's swallowed up by Vrommet along the baseline. Players flying all over the place. And speaking of flying, J.R. Smith with his head at rim level.
you didn't get the chance. I mean, there was supposed to be a quarter of the season left when the shutdown happened. You were having a particularly good stretch at that point. Are you disappointed not having the chance of the final quarter of the season to do what you wanted to do?
No, I'm not disappointed because, you know, things happen and things that you can't you control what you can control, and I can't control that. But as far as the MVP race, I think I, you know, show what I'm capable of doing. You know, not only individually, but from a team's perspective, us being number one in the West, there was a lot of conversation about, you know, LeBron can do those things in the East, but if he ever came to the West, what can he do? You know, so, you know, I heard all of that. And to be able to have our team at the top of the Western Conference and playing the way that we were playing at that time and the way I was playing, you know, that's definitely a good feeling.
That was the conversation LeBron and I had this morning over the NBA's decision that games played here in Orlando will not be included in consideration for the end-of-season awards like MVP, Rookie of the Year. LeBron actually didn't know, guys, or at least he said he didn't know that until I asked him about it this morning. But this is the league's call to say that for awards purposes, they only want to count what happened until the night of the NBA shutdown, so it is, quote, a fair process for all 30 teams. And with that, we welcome in Mr. George Sedano to the show. So, George, do you agree with the decision that they should not count the Orlando games toward NBA awards?
Yeah, Rachel, I do. Look, they've got a large enough sample size. Most of these teams have played somewhere between 63 and 67 games. And not everyone is going to treat these seeding games the same way. I think the Lakers, if you look at them specifically, there may be games that LeBron and AD don't even play. So because there'll be teams looking at this as a kind of a ramp up, almost like a glorified exhibition season, I just don't think they should count.
I disagree only because, like, why not? The eight teams that aren't coming are not exactly overflowing with award candidates, so we can leave them aside. And, like, even George is right that, like, these eight games really aren't going to affect the awards race, but there are a couple that it could affect. I look at a guy like Damian Lillard. If Damian Lillard gets Portland into the playoffs, he might get third, fourth, fifth on some MVP ballots. He might have a better argument for first-team All-NBA over a Luka Doncic or a James Harden. And yeah, maybe you don't care about that. Maybe he doesn't care about that. But, you know, that kind of stuff matters in history. So I say, why not?
Yeah, listen, I think it's unfair because these eight games, you know that old saying that's been around for hundreds of years, out of sight, out of mind? Well, the NBA has been out of sight, out of mind for about 4.5 months now. And so, to me, guys had an opportunity in these eight games to audition for these awards and make a strong statement and a strong push. Because right before the pandemic, LeBron James was on Giannis' heels like, you know, a pair of socks. And when you look at the Sixth Man of the Year award, when you look down at, you know, Dennis Schroeder and Lou Will and Montrezl Harrell, it was a race for the Sixth Man award. So in my opinion, it was going to come down to the stretch for a lot of these awards. Even the Most Improved Player, Bam out of the Bayou, Jason Tatum, Pascal Siakam, all these guys were making a strong case, and I think these eight games were important for the audition. But hey, it's not there, so, you know, we got to go on what we went on before the pandemic, but I was looking forward to guys coming out and actually auditioning and competing for these awards.
Yeah, look, in a way, we should have probably known this was coming, the way the league was looking at this. They called these last eight games in Orlando seeding games. They're really not looking at these like an extension of the regular season. They're looking at them as in preparation for the playoffs. So you can kind of see the mindset being consistent throughout all of the NBA's decision here. And since we now know the portion of the season that matters for awards voting is over, we can get straight into the MVP debate, guys. Giannis had a significant lead for most of the season, but LeBron's certainly starting to make a run just as the season was halted. And remember, Giannis was hurt when the shutdown happened, which also could have affected MVP. So, Zach, we didn't get the final quarter of the season. We didn't get to see if the Lakers ousted the Bucks from the top of the NBA standings. Where do you think the MVP race stands? Is it Giannis is going to be blown away with it, or do you think there will still be a battle there within the voting?
Let me just clarify for Rockets fans. James Harden is first-team All-NBA. I misspoke before. Second of all, coulda, woulda, shoulda. Yes, Giannis was injured. It might have become a race. None of that stuff happened. Instead, a whole lot of other horrible stuff happened, and here we are, and the season stopped. And the season stopped. Giannis is the MVP to me. It's almost impossible to make any kind of statistical case for LeBron, as great as he is. In most other seasons, LeBron wins MVP. In this season, Giannis is averaging 30 points and 14 rebounds a game and might win Defensive Player of the Year. That's very, very hard to compete against, and the Bucks have the best record in the NBA.
While I think that Giannis will win the MVP, if I were voting, I would vote for LeBron. And here's my case, Zach. He's number one in the West. It's a tougher conference to begin with. And I think he's the overall better player than Giannis. Giannis, for as great as he is, still has some holes in his game. LeBron is the most impactful player on the floor in ways that Giannis can't be. He's a better passer than him, and I think that part of it. He makes guys around him better, and we've seen him elevate guys. And I know that that's a case over years, but even in this particular season, again, this was not a Lakers team that everyone thought was definitely going to be the number one seed. So I would vote for LeBron in this particular case.
Ooh, George, do not give Zach all that good gospel. Don't hit him with them facts. Look, we're talking about the MVP. Listen, Giannis, in my opinion, he's the MDP, the most dominant player. But when you talk about the most valuable player to your team, that's LeBron James. I mean, listen, when he's off the court, the Lakers rank 28 offensively in the league. When he's on the court, they rank second. That's a huge drop-off. That means to tell me his value on that team is remarkable is an understatement. So with LeBron James and the way that he's been able to carry this Lakers team and this offense and make things easier for Anthony Davis, I have to applaud him. And by the way, where was this same energy when LeBron James was in the Eastern Conference that, oh, the Eastern Conference was weak? LeBron just tweeted that, by the way. He had to deal with that for 15 years. But now the narrative changed when it comes down to Giannis. I have a problem with that. It's just like back in the day in 05 and 06 when Shaq was the most dominant for the Miami Heat, and some may say even George, that he should have won the MVP that year, but they gave it to Steve Nash when he averaged 18 and 10 because he was the most valuable player for the Suns. So to me, you take LeBron James off the Lakers, where would the Lakers be? If you take Giannis off the Bucks would still be in the playoff hunt, probably a 5, 6, 7, or 8 seed in the Eastern Conference. I'm just saying.
Did I miss when everyone was talking up the Bucks supporting cast as like the greatest supporting cast in NBA history? Did I miss when the Lakers acquired Anthony Davis in a trade, like a top five player in the NBA? The conference stuff is mostly a straw man to me. I don't care about the conference stuff. It's a minor factor in any MVP race. What George said is interesting. It is possible that LeBron is still the better player. That's an interesting question. That's a playoff question. To me, I am asking the question, who was the most valuable player for the 60-whatever games in a regular season? And to me, whatever evidence you want to use leans to Giannis. The only stat that you could really cite is assists per game for LeBron. LeBron may still well be the better player in the playoffs, but I am looking at these 60-whatever games, who was more valuable? And again, I want to hear when everyone was telling me that the Bucks had this incredible supporting cast that without Giannis, they'd still be a 45, 48, 50-win team, whatever it takes to be the fourth or fifth seed in the East, because that's all new to me.
Well, Zach, I just heard you make a case for Giannis being the defensive player of the year when his teammate, Brook Lopez's numbers are better than his. So why is he not the defensive player
what
of
numbers?
The year? And by the way, rim protection is one of them, but I don't even feel like going down the list. But by the way, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this question. Back in 97, when Karl Malone won the MVP, right, Jordan was clearly the better player, right? Jordan clearly had the better numbers. Why did Karl Malone win the MVP over Jordan? I'm asking.
Storytelling. But Giannis has the better numbers this year.
But that's what I'm saying. But because what Karl Malone did for the Utah Jazz, he was the most valuable player on that team. That's what made it. That team's success was around Karl Malone, and that's the same thing that I'm saying about LeBron James.
Zach, the way I would look at it is this way. If you had to pick one guy right now to win one game, who would you pick? Because I would still go with LeBron over
different,
Giannis.
Different question. We're not talking.
You know what you're asking, George?
Who is the
you're
most
asking the question
for this season.
George, you're asking the question, should we really be having two awards like, you know, the NFL does and the NHL does? And like I've been saying on the show for 4 years, that the question of who the most valuable player in a season is, who had the best season, is not always the same question as who is the best player in the league. And that there is room to say that there are awards for both of them, like many of other American sports leagues do. We're going to put the pin in this right now. We're going to talk about this for sure for more. Coming up, though, in our next segment, the Grizzlies hold the eighth seed behind their young star, John Morant. What are the expectations for him in this Orlando restart? We'll discuss that after the break. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Our friend Malika Andrews shares her scenes from the NBA bubble. You can head over to the ESPN app to read all about it. Ahead of the NBA season restart on July 30th, we're going to have a special two-hour NBA countdown to preview the seeding games, look at all the news around the league, and break down how the association as a whole has responded to the social justice movement. That's Saturday, 8 Eastern, on ABC and the ESPN app. All right, guys, welcome back to The Jump. We're taking a look at a bunch of the teams down here in the Orlando bubble, and because it's been so very long since we saw them actually play basketball, we're catching you up on where they left off before the shutdown. Oh yes, it's time for Previously On the Memphis Grizzlies. Your dad used to trash talk you.
Yeah, I never heard anything positive from him. Still don't. It's always negative, so.
Ja turns the cushion that James Harden here gives him into an easy three. He clearly says, tell that mother bleeper about me. After the game, he signed his jersey and sent it over to the Lakers locker room for LeBron, unsolicited. Ooh. Yep, LeBron said he didn't even ask for it. Morant just assumed that he would want it. I love this kid. Look at this guy.
He's my favorite player right now.
Really?
I love Jaren Jackson Jr. I can't get enough of the dude. Love him.
These guys are competitive. They have their killer mentality.
I think I would actually call this trolling instead of a tribute.
Benches research other benches. I mean, not just the scouting reports, but the celebration.
That's next level.
I came in this league to try to prove that I can compete with the best, and that's just my mentality.
They were supposed to win 28 games. They are over 500.
I'm flabbergasted that Memphis is this good.
The best second in basketball right now is the moment that Ja Morant elevates for what might be a shot, might be a pass. Who knows what's going to happen?
Why are Ja's misses more impressive than most players' makes?
Because he tries anything.
One thing for sure, he's an entertainer. He's out there playing playground-style basketball in NBA sets.
Right. Ja Morant, I'm saying this right now, he's going to be an MVP in this league.
Whoa.
No, he's going to be an MVP in this league, and he's going to be arguably the best player in the game.
High praise. Take a look where Ja ranks among the other rookies this season. First in points, first in assists, first in usage, and third in PER. He has, of course, led the Grizzlies to currently holding the eighth seed. So, Kendrick, what are your expectations for Ja Morant in Orlando here?
My expectations are the same. Listen, Ja Morant has not let me down since he's been in college. And Rachel, you remember on draft night?
Yep.
When we were up there in New York and I told you, I said, listen, I would not be mad if the New Orleans Pelicans draft Ja Morant number one. People was looking at me crazy. At the end of the day, listen, this kid is a generational talent. We know this, but he's relentless. He don't care. He got it out the mud. And he's a hell of a leader. And you know what? During this pandemic, he put on 12 pounds of muscle and he looks phenomenal. And I've been seeing clips of Memphis and how they've been practicing and, you know, how they've been, you know, going about things. He's very mature and this kid is on a mission and he's not gonna let his foot off the gas no time soon.
This dude is one of the most electrifying players in the NBA already. Listen, in his like second or third game or something, he blocked Kyrie Irving at the buzzer of regulation, flexed all over him, trash-talked everybody in sight. He announced himself right away, but what's most impressive about him is not even that. It's that most rookie point guards on rebuilding teams are not good. They don't help them their teams win. The league just overwhelms them. This dude is good already. He's legitimately good. He's crafty. He thinks the game a half step ahead of everybody else on the floor. He's a good cutter off the ball. He's a decent shooter. He's just flat out really, really good and so far ahead of the curve for rookie point guards. It's incredible.
Rachel, just to piggyback off the guys, both made great points. But what I want to see is what Perk alluded to, is the 12 pounds. He's already one of the most athletic guys that we have on the floor to begin with. Now he's going to be able to kind of take that bump as he goes to the rim. How much more impactful can he be with that added weight, because he's going to be stronger and have that ability to take the contact as he goes to the rim? The sky is absolutely the limit for this kid. And my expectation is he's not going to bow out of the 8 seed that quickly. That's for sure.
Yeah, and look, we know that the offseason after a guy's rookie year is normally so consequential, right? They've learned how to work out. They've learned how to, you know, really make sure that they're getting the most out of their body. Ja Morant kind of already got that offseason after his rookie year in this shutdown. And now he's coming back for his rookie year playoffs, but it's almost like he has second year knowledge and a second year body. I'm so interested to see how that works. And yeah, guys, I'm also interested, because we won't have fans in the stands and you're gonna hear the players more. I'm really interested in the Ja Morant trash talk. I am here for it, so we'll see if that happens. George, you mentioned the race in the West. Take a look. Blazers, Pels, Spurs, Kings, Suns, all looking at Memphis. Zach, who is the better bet for the eighth spot? Would you say the Grizz or the Field?
You still gotta go the Grizz. They're 3.5 up. The Kings roster is a mash unit right now, although they have a pretty easy schedule. There's a little uncertainty about Zion, so I'm going to give it to the Grizzlies. I actually have faith in this team. Jaren Jackson's healthy, Brandon Clark's healthy. They get to integrate Justice Winslow. All they really have to do is go 3-5 and maybe just 2-6 to get into the play-in and maybe even hold the eighth seed. So I think I'm going Grizz over the Field.
Rachel, I don't know if I'm there with Zach just yet. As much as I said they wouldn't relinquish that easily, I still think that they're going to get in that play-in situation, and most likely it's going to be against a team like Portland, who's at full strength now all of a sudden. You got Zach Collins back. You got Yusuf Nurkic back. You still have Hassan Whiteside. Dame and CJ are healthy. That, to me, is the one team that I could see that, at full strength, will be able to take that and grab that 8 seed away from Memphis.
Well, listen, if I'm Memphis, I'm taking these 8 regular season games very seriously, because I'm going to approach each one of them like they're a playoff game so I could get separation. But when I'm looking at the teams down the line, yes, it's hard to count out Dame, Dollar, and C.J. McCollum, one of the best backcourts in the league, but they are missing Trevor Ariza. But a team to keep a close eye on is the San Antonio Spurs. And here's why. I was looking at their roster last night, and without LaMarcus Aldridge, you could never underestimate the great Greg Popovich. They had the makeup of going small. And we all know down there in that bubble, it's going to be an AAU-type setting, and it's going to be like pickup. And they're going to move Rudy Gay to the 5 with Deontay Murray and DeMar DeRozan. That means they're going to be getting up and down. And we all know that Patty Mills is capable of going for 40 points. We've seen that on plenty of occasions. But I will say, Memphis is not going anywhere no time soon. I had the Pelicans, but the uncertainty of Zion and when he's going to come back and if he's going to be in game rhythm raises a concern for me. So I think that the Memphis Grizzlies are going to hold that 8 seed down.
And remember, guys, they're 3.5 games ahead of their closest rivals. They've got to escape terminal velocity and get more than 4 games ahead to avoid a play-in game. If we do have a play-in situation, the higher seed only has to win once. The lower seed would have to win twice to be the one to kick them out of the playoffs. We'll have to see if that develops. George Sedano, thank you so much for joining us today. All the rest of you stick around, because up next, we're talking a little Steven Adams. He says he expects more technical fouls called by refs without any fans in the stands. We'll discuss that after the break. First, though, time for our second distant replay of the day. This one from this date in 2008, when Nate Robinson got his summer league jersey retired.
At this time, the NBA Summer League would like to honor Nate with a ceremonial summer league jersey retirement and thank him for his crowd-pleasing contributions over the past 4 years. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for number 4, New York Knicks, Nate Robinson.
The Jump is brought to you by Pizza Hut. Order today at pizzahut.com.
The WNBA season tips off Saturday on ABC. This is so exciting. Storm versus Liberty, followed by Sparks Mercury. All games also on the ESPN app. And all right, guys, it's crunch time here on The Jump. Our friend and NBA Hall of Famer Tracy McGrady has joined forces with Jermaine O'Neal to start a player representation agency in the fall. They're going to be agents, guys. They talked to the New York Times about their venture. Kendrick, how do you think Tracy will do as an agent?
They will both do great. Listen, I'm so happy when you, to see T-Mac and J.O. form together as an all-star in the Hall of Famer, guys that made hundreds of millions of dollars. What other type of mentorship that you need if you're a former player than coming from those two greats? Hey, Rachel, I just hope that T-Mac don't forget about us in the Jump family.
Always family, Kendrick, always. All right, I want to switch to the Kings. An MRI was performed on Marvin Bagley III last night following an injury to his right foot during practice. The Kings have already had four players test positive for coronavirus. One player unintentionally break the rules for the bubble and he's still in quarantine. And now this. Zach, how does Sacramento handle all of this?
It's not going great. And the shame of it is they're sneakily a good candidate to get into the play-in. They're tied with New Orleans. Their schedule is pretty manageable. They play New Orleans twice and could win the tie break. It's a shame.
Yeah, definitely tough for them. We'll have to see how they round out by the time the seeding games start. And of course, the Pelicans in that mix too with the question marks about Zion Williamson. All right, we are running out of time, but before we go, Steven Adams said today that he predicts the lack of fans in the stands will lead to more technical fouls called. And it's not just because, guys might be cursing out there. Adams said, quote, "The referees can hear what players are saying because, you see, we like to talk behind their backs. But they can actually hear us now. So there's going to be a lot more tease. That should be the only difference. Perk, is your old teammate right there?"
Hey, listen, I'm just happy I'm not down there in the bubble, Rachel. From a guy that led the league 3 years straight in technical fouls, I'm glad that I'm not down there. But listen, Adam Silver is going to have a meeting with the refs and tell them to keep a cool booty and have a little leeway. Listen, we're not going to be turning on our televisions to watch them blow the whistle and give technical fouls. They got to understand the circumstances. They got to understand that it's not going to be fans, so we got to find a way for these guys to be competitive. And we want to hear the noise talking, so the refs can't be too sensitive, and they got to sit back and relax.
NBA refs are pretty damn good at their job. I think they're going to be able to take it. If they can't take a little more chatter, then we're going to have three technical fouls per player, because then we're going to have a lot of ejections if they're going to be teeing people up left and right for everything they say. But I think the refs will be fine. I think we're going to move. Steven Adams is, we're going to have a non-issue here.
Look, guys, I do have some question marks here. I think Steven could be right only in this sense. We saw last season a real kind of battle emerge between the officials and even some of the more mellow players in the NBA. Steph Curry, one of the nicest humans in the league, remember, was shown disrespecting one of the referees as he walked away from him. And this time, it's not just that, referees are going to hear. Everyone's going to hear. And I wonder if the referees will feel like they can just walk away from being openly disrespected on national television. We will have to see if that happens. All right, we're all out of time for today, but guys, I want to let you know The Jump is on tomorrow at 3:30 Eastern, half hour later than usual, but we're right here on ESPN, so we'll see you back there, and congratulations on the bookshelf, Zach.